this. If you haven't gotten your notes, they're up front. If you've not done a evaluation, if you could do that for us and get that back to me, and I'll get it to Pastor Bredo. I do have the final exam with me. I will give that to you afterward. I made a decision this week to make it open notes. So, listen, it's not difficult anyway. Most of you would do just fine. My desire is that people go back through the notes as form of review. I'm not looking, again, I'm not looking to trick anybody. I'm not looking to pull any quick ones on people. I know the information I think is important and I want you to know. And I think in my perspective, if I take you back through the notes again and you go and you're going through it again, you're reviewing, and I'm okay with that. And so I will give that to you afterward. There are, I believe, 67 questions. But again, a lot of which was taken from your midterm, and so I don't think you'll find it difficult at all. I don't even think there's a. There's a couple where you have to write something, but I didn't do any. You have to write a book or an essay or anything. So I'm trying to keep on Benson's popularity list at this point. So most of you. If you have a guilty conscience, then that's okay. Okay, we are on commandment number 10, week number 12. Why don't we have a word of prayer together, and we will read our commandment and get into our notes together. Father, we are looking forward to summertime. We do appreciate the warm weather that we are experiencing. Father, it's nice to see the sun. It's refreshing to us. And Lord, you've been very good to us, and we just want to, again, thank you for the way you take care of each of our needs and how you supply even our wants many times. Father, we just ask that our hearts would be prepared tonight for you to give us something, Lord, something practical, something that would help us to be different, something that would help us to bring honor and glory to you, Lord. I pray that we would be consumed with glorifying you, and we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Now, I know there's going to be quite a few people missing tonight due to vacations and stuff like that. I know of three people doing that. A couple people are sick. And so we're going to work our way right out of this season. And yes, Mr. Hayes.
I have a praise light, Jared.
Yeah, afterward. No, just keep going ahead.
I had just gone and priced out races for my son. It came to about $4,800. And they lost the dog's head race, so the race started getting in the day, and I got it for
$25. Man, that is quite a...
So I saved about $2,200.
Amen.
So I praying, they got out of nowhere and worked this out.
They're new, right?
Okay. Yeah. Run up through the dishwasher a couple times. They're all okay. Commandment number 10 in our text, chapter number 20. It says this, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass. And now probably some of us are stopping and going, well, so far I'm okay because my neighbor is not a farmer and they don't have any servants. But then God closes it by saying, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. And so God, for those of us who look for loopholes, God closed it quickly, and there's no loophole given there. And so this is the longest of the Ten Commandments, the most detailed, 33 words given in this commandment. And it's also the most practical. This commandment does not have a whole lot of case laws under it as some of the other ones did, especially, for example, thou shalt not murder. Commandment number 6 had a lot of case laws. This commandment has very few. It's a lot more practical. I don't think that it really has a need for a lot of case laws. It speaks for itself. And there are a lot of us that can take it as far as we want. In other words, I told you about the guy that I knew at Life Action Ministries who would walk through someone's room. He said he picked up someone's picture. He looked at it, put it down, and kept going. His heart smote him. He was convicted that he shouldn't have been doing that. It was trespassing in his mind. And so you have to make a determination tonight as you go through this commandment. How far do I take this for myself? Everything that we look at tonight, everything that we... shopping, commercials, advertising, everything is geared to make you want something. And you have to make a determination when that is sin for you and when you're just shopping around for a new car. You know what I'm saying? I mean, all of us can look at a car out in this parking lot right now and probably find one we would like to be driving. Where is admiring the car, and where is it crossing the line where you have now started to covet someone else's vehicle? I've often looked at Pastor Grace's and thought that is a sharp looking vehicle. And yeah, which one? I know. Don't get me in trouble now. But anyway, I you have to make a determination. When have I crossed the line? When have I started coveting, and when am I shopping? You have to make a determination on that. And so let's look at the notes here. This is the longest, most detailed of the commandments. It's also different in the fact that it deals not only with a sin of commission, but with a sin of the heart. Although the other commandments show the same root in the heart, you must use other scriptures to do so. In other words, what I'm saying is, we know that you're not supposed to kill, but if you go to other passages of scripture, you find that hatred in God's eyes is murder. And but the original commandment does not necessarily say that. Jesus clarified that if you look at a woman to lust after her in your heart, you've committed adultery. The original commandment does not say that. But this commandment, commandment number 10, actually is a shot right directly at the heart initially. And it's a sin of the heart. The 10th commandment, in its original form, ties the heart directly to it. Moses repeats this commandment in Deuteronomy 5:21 with a couple small differences. And this is what it says. Neither shalt thou desire thy neighbor's wife, neither shalt thou covet thy neighbor's house, his field, or his manservant, or his maidservant, his ox, or his ass, or anything that is thy neighbor's. The two differences that you'll notice, number one, he says, thou shalt not desire thy neighbor's wife. And so, in a way, redefining for us a little bit the word covet, it is... And as I said, you're going to have to make a determination for yourself where that line is of looking at something, not just in the case of a woman, but looking at something and desiring to have it. When is it okay and when is it not? You say, well, that's kind of easy in some ways, and in some ways it probably is, but there are going to be some categories that you're going to look at something and wish you had it, and conviction will hit you. Other times you have to make a determination. I'm just looking around and shopping. not in the category of your neighbor's wife, obviously. All right, this command is all inclusive. Oh, the other one was his field. He added in the field as a second change, or the second addition that was different from the Exodus chapter 20. But this command is all inclusive in its scope. Because he says, quote, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. This takes from us all exceptions and justifications. A better understanding of this command will be gained through the definition of coveting. According to Webster's 1828 dictionary, which is much better than the 2000 edition, coveting is to desire or wish for with eagerness, to desire earnestly to obtain or possess, to desire inordinately. And, you know what, we all can give illustrations of this. None of us are innocent. I mentioned this to you, I think, a while back on one of the commandments, that when I was about 12 years old, I remember desiring passionately a remote racetrack thing. And I remember it consumed my thoughts. I had to have one. And I saved up my money, and I spent all the money that I saved. I didn't have much. And that racetrack, I used it a number of times, but not as much as what you would have thought for someone who had to have this racetrack. And that's what he's talking about, this inordinate, this unnatural longing and desire and passion to have something to where it might even consume your thoughts. The issue of sin, then, is not just coveting, but it's coveting what is not ours, what is not right for us, or what is not lawful. Now, here is how Jesus says it in Mark chapter 10. He says, "And when he had gone forth into the way, there came one running and kneeled to him and asked him, 'Good master, what shall I do that I may inherit eternal life?' And Jesus said unto him, 'Why callest thou me good? There is none good but one, that is God. Thou knowest the commandments.'" Now Jesus is going to pick out some of them. And he says, "Thou shalt not commit adultery. Do not kill. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Defraud not. Honor thy father and thy mother." Now, as you take a look at the ones presented, defraud not would be pointing to commandment number 10. And so in so doing, Jesus uses the word defraud to explain coveting. And that is the case as we look at this. And the word defraud means this. We've looked at it last week. To oppress, violate, or get deceitfully, to deceive, to use up, to do violence, to wrong someone. And so we see that this concept of coveting is also defrauding, or a form of stealing, to take from someone else what is not rightfully ours. Defrauding is something that comes in a couple other places, and we mentioned those last week. But a husband could defraud his wife, or a wife could defraud the husband, and taking something from them that is rightfully theirs. So in this case, as we're thinking about covet not your and anything that your neighbor's wife, God, looking at our heart, says that is stealing. You're taking from someone something that is not rightfully yours. And so we are guilty. You know, there are some of us that might think, we were, as a young person even, we were good people. And I'm not talking about perfect, but I'm saying good. Was not out doing the drugs. And I was one of those kids. I was afraid to get in trouble. And I really did everything I could to stay out of trouble. But you know what? We could look at all the commandments. I've never murdered. I've never done that. But when you get to this commandment, there's not one innocent person. This is a commandment that is broken so regularly. But because it's a sin mostly of our heart, we think that we're getting away with something. And it doesn't bother us as much. But it is just as much one of the Ten Commandments as any other. This makes the sin of the heart also a sin of commission. The Scriptures also delineates between coveting that which is good and that which is evil or bad. Habakkuk 2:9 says this, "Woe to him that coveteth in evil covetousness to his house." And in my mind, as I read that, if there's an evil coveting, then there must be a good coveting in a form. And here's the verse I want to point you to. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 31. It says, "But covet earnestly the best gifts, and yet show I unto you a more excellent way." And so the Apostle Paul, in talking about the spiritual gifts, is saying that we should covet earnestly the best ones. There are spiritual gifts out there that people want to have. And let's just say it, that understanding that in the concept or the context of tongues, that's one of those gifts that was great back in the day when the sign gifts were needed and necessary. But the Apostle Paul said, you know what, it's not that great of a thing. I mean, no, how many people understand you? And if you don't have someone to interpret, what's the sense? He says, earnestly covet the best gifts, the ones that are most effective. And so there are some things, obviously, that is okay for us to desire or to want. And those are spiritual things. Now, let's look at the facts of the law. The heart, or the issue at the heart of this commandment is contentment and trust. Our world is bent on making us discontent. The whole concept of advertising is to make us think that we have a need for a product or a service. It is to make us either recognize or imagine a need. I don't know if you know any ladies that have 100 pair of shoes. But I talked to someone recently, and that's the continuing joke with his girlfriend is that she has more shoes. What was it, Amelia Marcos or something, or someone like that who had hundreds of pairs of shoes. Now, you know, all of us, you're going to have something like that. There's probably some of us own something that the rest of us would make fun of. We make fun of women in shoes, but, you know, how about tools? Or how about, you say, well, those are necessary things. I'm going to tell you something. I've got a lot of tools that I have never used, but I sure like having them. Someday maybe. But I have a lot of tools I've never used and probably won't use, but I'm not going to throw them away. I'll keep them. And maybe you have something. My brother Brandon was the king of collecting things. He never had any money to his name. He would work to collect. And he would work. He worked at, I remember, one of the toy stores as a teenager. And every time he got his paycheck, he would come home with the figurines, whether it was Superman or Spider-Man, all the figurines that would come out, left them all in their packages. Every comic book that came out, still in its plastic case, you would never even read them. He would come home with everything you can imagine. He would collect these things. And I believe they stayed in storage. All the way through, and my dad just moved to Florida about 8 months ago, 9 months ago, and he finally said, everything's got to be out of the house, and because it was all stuffed up in the attic. He never even looked at the stuff. Now, I'm sure some of it's worth a lot of money. He had football, baseball cards, all for years he was collecting these things. And so before we cast stones at, or too many stones at people for things that they spend their money on, let's make sure we look in our own backyard and make sure that we're not doing the same thing on a different scale. Now this year, the Super Bowl ads came out, and those of you who did not know that it was a record cost this year, $2.4 million for every 30 seconds. And there was 59 spots available. That's how many spots they sold this year, 59 spots. And actually, at the point of this writing, this was just before the Super Bowl, as a matter of fact, it said 90% of the 59 slots available were sold, and we know that they were all sold because they didn't have any. I never saw, we didn't watch commercials, so I don't know, but I'm sure there was no fuzz every 30 seconds because they didn't sell one of their spots. I'm sure they all sold. But they spent, the network, Fox Network, collected $140 million from that broadcast just in commercial sales. And normal TV, by way of comparison, 30-second ads on prime time typically run about $400,000. So every, and I'm telling you, I am sick of car commercials. Every car place comes up on there. And anyway, $400,000 is what they're spending for every 30-second commercial. They would not be doing that if it was not accomplishing what it was supposed to. If it wasn't bringing customers in to spend money, they're not going to spend the money on advertising. So it's working. I wonder how many times you've been sitting there watching TV and you saw a pizza commercial and you called in.
Yeah.
Does it work? popcorn, drinks, whatever it is. And the commercials pop up, and all of a sudden you're thinking, I am kind of hungry. It's only $10 for a large on sale this week. Yeah, that's pretty good. Get suckered in. Look it, we don't need it. Believe me.
What do you mean, don't need it?
9 o'clock at night.
Yes.
All right. Anyway. Yeah, right. AmeriQuest Mortgage paying a record $15 million to sponsor what was sure to be a great intermission at the Super Bowl, Paul McCartney. And AmeriQuest Mortgage paid $15 million just for the halftime entertainment. I don't know who got that money. I don't think Paul McCartney's worth $15 million for the 20 minutes he was on or whatever it is. But you think about $15 million AmeriQuest was willing to pay. I don't even know where their logo showed up. I don't know if they got the free 30-second slot. free if that's what they got for that $15 million. But they were willing to spend that money. Now here, again, let me just say this is the truth of it is they don't spend this money unless it was doing something. You and I are suckers. And we see something, it stirs in us a desire for something. Who doesn't want, in the middle of the wintertime in Rochester, New York, who wouldn't want heated seats in their car? I've gotten in there before. Now, I don't have them. If you saw my vehicle, you'd know. But I got into a relative of mine who has heated seats, and I'm telling you something, it was nice. You had a cold day, auto start from inside the house, the seats kick on, they start warming up for you. You go out to your car, you're sitting there, man, it's toasty. None of this scraping off the front window inside. My defrost went out 2 years ago. Now, I had it fixed since because it was getting a little dangerous. But when you're driving down the road and you're not worried about scraping the outside, but you're actually scraping the inside to see what you're doing, that's when it's getting bad. And but, you know, you see the commercial, you're thinking, that's kind of nice. Or you get into the vehicle with this person, you think, wow, it's nice to not have to worry about, you know, how much oil I have in my driveway. And I got some in my driveway. These kind of things, it's nice not to worry about that stuff. And you start looking, and you start wanting, you start desiring. There was another place, CareerBuilder.com, Super Bowl ads, debuting two commercials. And this is the one with the real monkeys. But they spent $200 million on just those commercials to present a need that you and I would have in our lives. And so it's the world knows how to do this, and they know the human nature. I think sometimes that we want to deny it. We want to deny that we have this problem. We have to understand that it is a problem of discontent. It's a problem of trust. How in the world is God going to get us $4,500 for braces? Well, I don't know. He does, though, doesn't he? He can do it. God knows how to do these things. When everyone around us has more or better things, it's hard for us to be happy with what we have. Paul taught us what our attitude ought to be in the following verses. Here's just a couple. Philippians 4:11, he said, "Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned, in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content." He said, "For I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need." We are a rich country. We have no idea. We have no idea how good we have it. Driving around a 1995 car, I've got luxury over what a lot of people have in different places. When I go to New York City on our missions trip and I see people literally living on the street, when I see people living in a cardboard box, all they have is in a grocery cart that they're pushing around. And they don't want to leave that cart because that's all their worldly possessions, all they have. I've got it good. You know what? I need siding on my house. My house looks hideous. I need windows in my house because my windows, it's like having a screen in the wintertime. I mean, I just got it. Last year, I plasticed my windows and it blew the plastic off. It popped it right off, man. It was that bad. Now, this is crazy. I need new windows. I need new siding. But you know what? I'm rich compared to what a lot of people are. And I've got to be careful. I know that there's a point where I can say, you know what? It'd be conservation for me to get siding and windows because my energy bill will go down. So there's a point where I can take care of that. But at the same time, I've got to be careful not to say, you know, I just want to keep up with my neighbors. I mean, everyone else has got new siding on. I want to embarrass ourselves. I don't want our neighbors to be embarrassed. And we have to understand, as Paul was saying, to learn to be content. He said in 1 Timothy 6:6, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. Having food and raiment, let us therewith be content." And let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have. Why? For he has said, "I will never leave thee nor forsake thee." And that's a great lesson to be learned. The concept of coveting goes beyond just the desire of the heart, but it also includes involvement eventually, taking that which does not belong to us. Anytime someone steals, it started as a heart issue. The Bible teaches that this sin does start in the heart, Proverbs 6, but ends at displaying itself in the life of people. Jesus explained this word in Mark 10:19 when he said, "Thou knowest the commandment," and we've mentioned this, but where he says, "Defraud not." The word defraud is one of action, which is proven in some of the following cases. And these are some of the ones that we kind of touched on a few of these last week, so we're not going to spend a lot of time doing this. But the word defraud is one of action. It is one that is lived out. It is not just an issue of the heart or the mind, as lust might be, but it is a sin of commission. Illustrations even of Ahab under number 3, desiring a vineyard. And this guy was as shallow as you can be. And when he couldn't get the vineyard, what did he do? He pouted. He went to bed and he pouted. Now, this is a grown king. This is a grown man. Have you ever pouted before? Now, I've pouted. Didn't get my way as an adult. Imagine how silly we must look. You know, to me, I'm just frustrated. I'm mad. No, you're pouting. And if we only knew how silly we look when we're pouting, grown men, the only thing we lack is the lip coming out. And we're just pouting, we're mad, we're pouncing our feet around the house, or we're upset about something, and, you know, it's because we didn't get our way. It's a sin. And we want things our way. And this commandment reaches into those kind of things. Not getting our way. Desiring to have something that is not our own. And Ahab wanted a vineyard. He liked the look of his field. He said, "That's got to be mine." He went to the guy and tried to get it. Naboth said no. And he went home and he laid in his bed and pouted until his wife came and took care of him. And his wife came and asked him, "What's wrong, honey?" And he said, "I want this vineyard." "Well, take it then." So the wife went out and took care of it for him. And so pouting. David coveted Uriah the Hittite's wife. David already had wives. He already had two. Why would you want three? What are you thinking? And he desired it. He went and he took. And that is just a couple of the examples of that in here. Now, the fallout of the law, the consequences and effects surrounding this commandment. Some of these are just practical, but they're obvious as well. Letter A, covetousness leads to destructive life patterns. Destruction and perdition is an example of that. Entire loss and destruction or ruin. That's what covetousness does to someone. You watch people who want, you watch people who do anything for it, you watch people who gamble, they lose everything. They have nothing left. Yes, sir. Okay. Okay.
Would you say that calling your food and clothing that you should be content to remove those are two items that should bring you contentment outside of that? Everything else is the lack of luxury?
I would say that.
Like some people say, food, clothing, shelter. So here it says food and clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason why you leave out the shelter?
Well, I think I've thought of the same thing. What do you think? Someone give some input.
Example of Jesus. The fact that the man had holes, but the Son of Man had nowhere to lay his head. It's just pointing back to Christ.
He's got himself.
What you give up here, you gain down there. What you gain down there, you give up here. Don't have to worry about the hurricanes and tornadoes. Like you're gonna have a place to need a place to hide if you're gonna move down there. Let's think about it. If Peter had a house, right? Because they went to his house. Jesus never required him to get rid of it. It wasn't a sin to him.
I'm I'm not saying that anything above these two things is sin or anything.
Right.
After I have these two, if I have the shirt on my back and food in my belly, then I'm I'm content at that point. You know, a house is just a slot and it's above and beyond. A car, transportation, is just above and beyond.
I mean, are you allowed to be discontented about that food?
I like it.
What was your question?
Are you allowed to be discontented about that food?
Oh.
How much is the question? Do you enough to say, like, enough to be able to fully comfortable? One person is fully comfortable, it's certainly not another.
Any goes beyond that. I think the first, I think you ought to be contented with that food. I think God sometimes is going to take us. Having food doesn't mean having a burger in a bag. It's being able to take the next step. And if we are still able physically to move on, I think of the book, I think it was Kevin Bruchko, had to go out and go to South Africa and literally had no food. And at the point of death, God provided a bundle of bananas. He was content. He was laying there saying, God, I guess this is where I'm supposed to go. I guess that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to die right here. And he looks and there's a bundle of bananas. Probably I'm stuck. Maybe the food, you've got to be content. I don't know about you guys, but I'm content when I'm eating. I'm content when there's food nearby. But when we get to a place where we're content, even when we don't know where the next meal is coming from, I think that's probably the challenge in that verse, personally.
Mm-hmm. And again, yeah, I think that these are pointing some of the basics in life. So again, you have to define what basics are. Food, clothing, shelter, vehicle. Is that a basic in our culture?
I mean very well without a vehicle, it's
unhealthy. Mm-hmm. I think we would have trouble.
I think you need to do is within easy walking distance here. I can't walk to work, it takes me 3 days.
So I think, you know, in my perspective, I'm looking at the basics of life. But everyone's basics could be different. I mean, and like Dan says, culturally, we go over to Africa. Two sets of clothing is plenty, probably, for some of the people in some of the cultures there. The amount of rice that they get, the amount of food they get, I think we could probably cut back and be satisfied. Yep. Pizza at 9 o'clock at night is going to have to go, Steve. All right, number two, we have sorrow and regret. Covetousness leads to sorrow and regret. There are lots of people that have gone for the gold and gone for the money, and the old song "Cats in the Cradle" would tell you, they gave everything up for the money, and then later on realized that that wasn't really what they were shooting for after all. And we learned the hard way. And whether it's money we're shooting for or whatever, but our focus is not on the eternal. So sorrow and regret are one of those consequences. Walking away from the faith, 1 Timothy 6, will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and have pierced themselves through with many sorrows. And there are those that have walked away from the faith due to covetousness, due to a desire for more, a desire for money. There are people in the ministry that make good money. And then there are people in ministry, and I'm not just talking about pastoring, but there are people in missions, too, that are making good money. Because they're not doing it right, either, I want to say. Some of them. And I've watched people in ministry steal from supporters and steal from churches, and I've watched them turn in every receipt for things that really ought not to be turned in for. I have watched, and I'm not talking about here, fortunately, but I have watched that stuff. And but you know what? If you're looking to make money, ministry's not the place to go. You can make a lot better money at Citibank and other places too. But erring from the faith, there are people that have walked away from God because of the God of money, a desire to make more, to have more. Number four, we will be duped by the lure of money. And through covetousness shall they with feigned words make merchandise of you. And because of a lust, a desire for things. Number five, it leads to sexual sin, a dissatisfaction with where God has us in relationships. 2 Peter 2:14, having eyes full of adultery, and cannot cease from sin, beguiling unstable souls, and heart have they exercised with covetous practices. Cursed children. And covetousness, as he mentions directly in the commandment number 10, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. Obviously, that's where it begins. And covetousness leads to sexual sin. And it all builds up over time, continuing through. You got your car. So letter A, we have covetousness leads to destructive life patterns. Letter B, covetousness should lead to the breaking of fellowship by other believers. Now I want to say that's both individually as well as the possibility of corporate or church discipline. You and I, if we know of someone who is a covetous person, you ought to break fellowship. They ought not to be a close friend of ours. And you know what? There's other areas. We've talked about church discipline. We've talked about the breaking of fellowship. And it doesn't do us any good when a couple people break fellowship, but everyone else hugs the feet of the person who should be out of fellowship with the believers. The goal of church discipline, the goal of breaking fellowship, is to bring that person back to where they should be in relationship with God. And when the church inconsistently does that, when there's a couple people that say, we see sin in his life that's very dangerous, and we're going to break fellowship, but everyone continues to have him teach in the Bible study or minister in Sunday school or whatever it is, it's inconsistent. It's not going to accomplish what it should. And thus we have people who look very judgmental, pharisaical. Who are they to judge me? Because the church is not consistent in that. But 1 Corinthians 5:11, but now I have written unto you not to keep company, if any man that is called a brother be a fornicator. Now that's serious. We would look at that and say, wow, yeah, that's right. If I know of a guy who's in fornication, I'm going to confront him and I am not going to have close fellowship with him. But how about the next one? How about a covetous person? Paul lumps it right together. This is a serious sin. He adds on an adulterer, or a railer, or a drunkard, or an extortioner. With such an one, know not to eat. Don't even go out to eat with them. I mean, God is not talking about just this little pet sin that could be hidden. Although this 10th commandment is not as, like we said, doesn't have the case laws, it doesn't seem to have the weight behind it that even 1 through 8 or 1 through 9 have, it is a very serious sin in the eyes of God. And we ought to break fellowship with believers that are covetous, that have a tendency of dissatisfaction. And you know, this, as with any sin, if we allow it to fester within us, inside of the church body, it becomes contagious. And it runs rampant. God says, break fellowship. Letter C, covetousness does bring disfavor and anger of God. For the wicked boasteth of his heart's desire, and blesseth the covetous whom the Lord abhorreth. God hates that. And so, again, this sin may seem almost quiet or innocent in some ways because it's mostly a sin of the heart. God says that He hates it. In letter D on page number 138, being generous on the opposite side of it is a sign of a growing relationship with God. It's a sign of a growing relationship with God to be generous, to be giving. Proverbs 21:26, he that coveteth greedily all the day long, but the righteous giveth and spareth not. The prince wanteth understanding and is also a great oppressor, but he that hateth covetousness shall prolong his days. And so being generous, and we talked about that in the book of Corinthians as well, being generous, being willing to look beyond my own desires, my own wants, and to help those who are in need. Pure religion undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows and finish it, can keep himself unspotted from the world. To be looking to the needs and those things that other people are in need of, and we can be a help to them, being generous. Why don't we stop right there? We'll take a break, and it should not take us long to finish, and then I will give you the final exam to take home with you. So let's take 10. Looking at the framework of the law, the case laws found under this commandment, and I mentioned there's not a whole lot of case laws that are found under this, this commandment. If you were to read Rush Dooney's book, as a matter of fact, you know, while you're getting ready for bed, just ready to go out, and you want to read a nice 600-page book, very small chapter in his book. And if you read some of the other chapters, though, as you can imagine, if you've got 550, 600 pages, you're going to have quite a few pages under many of those chapters. And this is a very short one in his book. But looking at these case laws, a couple things that to take into consideration. Number one is church leadership. Church leadership is not to have a reputation or lifestyle of covetousness. 1 Timothy 3:3, given here it says, not given to wine nor striker, not greedy of filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, not covetous. Now, again, being a sin of the heart, if you are on the pulpit committee of a small country church out in Hickville, and you have people coming to candidate for the position of pastor in your church, and you're looking at these requirements, how do you think some of the ways are that you will determine whether someone's covetous or not? What are some of the things that you think, how are you going to know that? Come on, you're on the committee now. So what are you worth? How much do you think we should pay you? So he has a very expensive vehicle that he drives up in with high expectations. Yeah, that's happened before. I have been to many churches, and not on staff, but I've been to many churches, and I've been in some situations where I've seen what I thought was a little bit covetous, a little bit having a hand always out, expecting from people. I've mentioned this before as well, that not to take advantage of people that you know, relationships, because someone has a talent or a trade, and so you take advantage of that. That's the kind of thing that you got to watch out for. But Paul giving this list includes covetous, and we need to look for that. We need to be careful of that to make sure someone is a giving person, a generous person, not a greedy person, not always looking for themselves, not always trying to get every phone bill, every electric bill covered by the church, and every little receipt turned in. I know people like that. Letter B. Letter B, we have idolatry. And this is one of the case laws. Of course, this fits under commandment number 1 and 2 as well. And so we're just going to make mention that Paul ties these two together in the book of Colossians. He says, "Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which by definition is idolatry." Desiring something that is not ours, desiring something with a passion, God says you've just put it in your life as an idol, something of worship. And it's interesting how Paul words that, mortify your members, speaking to Christians, speaking to the church. These are things that you and I have to deal with as a part of our life, a part of our body. Mortify your members, put them to death. In covetousness, which is idolatry, is one of those issues. Letter C, we have other sins and vices that are attached to breaking this commandment. I'm going to list a few of these. Number one is malice. According to the Webster's 1828, it defines malice as extreme enmity of heart, a disposition to injure others without cause from mere personal gratification, to regard with extreme ill will. And I know someone who has defined malice as, I can't remember exactly how they said it, but it was along the lines of being upset with someone else's fortunes. And then the opposite of that, being rejoicing at someone's misfortunes. Something goes wrong for someone, they get a demotion, they lose their job, and you're kind of like, must have done something wrong, must have sin in their lives, you know. And we become the king of judgment. You know, we know why that they've lost their job, because they obviously have sin in their lives, and maybe you're the sin that's in their lives. Who knows? Peter was concerned that he would suffer more than his friend John would, and that was frustrating to him. And in verse 20, Peter turning about, seeing the disciple whom Jesus loved following, which also leaned on Jesus' breast at supper, and said, "Lord, which is he that betrayeth thee?" And Peter, seeing him, saith unto him, "Lord, what shall this man do?" Jesus saith unto him, "If I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? What is it any of your business? Follow thou me." And so Peter was concerned. Jesus just got done telling him, "You're going to be crucified. You're going to be carried in your death. You're going to die this way." And Peter says, "Now, well, how's he going to die? In other words, I want to know that he's going to die too. It's not fair to me that I'm going to die, and I've been at the forefront. I have been there with you. I have done everything. How is John going to die? Give me some good information." That's malice. That's a desire to see someone else have a misfortune, someone else to suffer alongside of you. And, you know, a lot of times that is a normal, natural response that you and I have because of our sinful nature. If I am going to suffer, I sure hope someone else is going to suffer with me. And what's going to happen to them? And that's what Peter was saying. Now, I don't think it's fair. And Jesus said, "Hey, if I allow him to live until I return, that's none of your business. Just do what you know you're supposed to do. You live right." Jesus basically had told him that. Mind his own business. Worry about yourself. And number two, under these other sins and vices, we have jealousy, a feeling of anger because of someone else's advantages, their possessions, or their lifestyle. My sister sent me an email. I have it on my computer, and it says, "What gas will buy these days?" And it had pictures of the home of some guy that used to be high in the United Arab Emirates, and he owned a gas company, an oil company. And in all honesty, you would never say it was a home. It was a city, a mini city. You look at the horizon, the pictures that she gave me, and to look at the bathroom. You and I could live in the bathroom that this guy had. the waiting room where they would walk in and just relax for a couple moments. Why do you need that room? Just because they got the money to spend on it. He had all these really expensive cars out in the front, all lined up perfectly. One of them made out of pure silver. And why? Well, he had the money. Why not, right? And, you look at some of that and I go, I wish I had just the fixtures in his bathroom. just the faucet that he has. I'd love to sell that on eBay and buy something worthwhile. But you look at some of those things and the advantages of someone, you look at someone like Bill Gates, and I've talked to people who have said, if I had that kind of money to help people. And I wish it were true. Most of the time when someone has that much money, it ruins them. It ruins more people than it helps. And those of us who think that, if I had that money, I'd have that much more to help everybody. I wish that were true. But for the most part, when someone gets that much money, they become very introverted because you never have enough. Never have enough. And you're going to find people who had all that money become suicidal and destructive, very turned in, not to the needs of other people. Now, I'm not saying, because Bill Gates has given a lot of money. But I'm going to tell you this. He hasn't given sacrificially. He gives $90 million to a cause. That's not sacrifice to him. You think about that. None of us combined will reach even close to what he's given away, but he's never once sacrificed. He has not missed a meal because he gave away $90 million. And so although I do appreciate his willingness to give, he's not sacrificial. I'm not casting stones, okay? If he wanted to throw some this way, I wouldn't throw it back. So jealousy. We have some examples. Cain was jealous that his brother Abel received special recognition from God. He decided to kill him. Joseph's brothers were jealous of the special treatment that Joseph received from his father and from their father. Their jealousy led them to a desire the death of Joseph, and they did. They sold him into slavery, expecting that he was going to die. Our attitude ought to be mutual happiness for others and a desire to see for them to do well in life. And here's a few verses that we not only ought to memorize, but we ought to be practicing and living. Rejoice with them that do rejoice and weep with them that weep. And that's what it's about. It's learning to rejoice with someone when they get a raise. To really be genuinely happy for them. To desire for everyone around you to succeed. Not for you to succeed so that they can be pushed down. And, John said that he wanted Christ to increase. And be of the same mind one toward another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low degree or low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. Recompense no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. But learn to rejoice with others. Learn to weep with others when things are not going well. Letter D, the brother of the prodigal was not happy that his brother returned because the brother got preferential treatment that he wanted for himself. And that was his complaint. He wasn't happy that his brother returned. He was upset. He went outside of the house and he pouted as an adult and was not happy that the father was giving him a party because he returned. We ought to be rejoicing when someone gets right with the Lord. Not, what's he trying to get out of this? Or, what's their motive? Or why are they doing that? I have never done that. I've stuck faithful all along, and now they're coming back and everyone's all happy. We ought to rejoice with that. Learn to rejoice. All right, page number 140, the fixture of the law. Letter A, realize and remember that life is much more than possessions and money. Look toward eternity, not Florida. All right, I guess that's what I have to say. Look toward eternity, don't look toward Florida. retirement, the easy life, when I can finally stop working and start relaxing, sit down on the beach and have no worries, no concerns, no schedule, no prior, just sit there and relax. And that's what so many are looking for, the easy life. Jesus said this, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth." It's not, you and I are not going to be judged based on the amount of things that we have in our garage. Some garages I've seen. And or in our storage shed. Or the size of the house. Or the listen, you and I have to take care of the things that we have, but we don't have the right to have all the luxuries that we think we ought to. And to think of some of the things that Gary has told us before, Gary Thornton, on $120,000 credit card debt on some people that he's talked to. Why? Where in the world are you spending $120,000? I mean, how long does it take? I mean, of course, it depends on if you're buying a $50,000 car or things like that, but I mean, you think about that kind of debt. Is it necessary things or is it luxury? Are they being content with clothing? Oh, and shelter, too. Depending on what culture you're in. This is what Matthew 6:25, "Therefore I say unto you, take no thought of your life, what you shall eat or what you shall drink, nor yet for your body what you shall put on. Is not life more than meat, and the body more than raiment?" God says, "I'm going to take care of you. Learn to be content. Remember that it's not in what you own. It's in who owns you." That's really the important thing. Proverbs 15:16, "Better is little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble therewith." Do you really want Bill Gates' money? Do you really? Now you think about the life that guy has to live. You say, well, he's got all kinds of money. Yeah. He also can't walk out into public. He also can't take a stroll down the street. He also can't just get in his car and go out for a ride with his wife without threat of being murdered for his money or taken captive for his money. Or, you know what? I don't want that. That you can have, if you desire Bill Gates' money, you can have it. But listen, you're not going to know who your friends are. Now, are you still my friend because you like me? Or are you my friend because you hope to get something? Well, I do need a new roof. That's what I thought. See, there's a lot of things that you and I think that'd be great to have that. But you know what? There's a lot of trouble with it. There's a lot of things that come with money that you and I don't want. I would not. You know, people say, I would love to have the prestige or the position of a president, the president of the United States. See, I look at that guy and I think, I would rather die than have to give the amount of speeches he does. And to go out in the public with the, I mean, the guy has got people that he doesn't even know are there that are out protecting him. He's got more people watching him than we have in our church. And he's just to go out for a jog. You see other people jogging? Those are secret police, man. Those aren't just other citizens out jogging. You're not going to get that close to him. I don't want that kind of life. I like to be able to go out here and go for a walk. I'd like to walk down the canal with my family and not worry about having 25 bodyguards and having, you know, send people ahead of time to scope out and to make sure there's no one hiding in the bushes and to clear out buildings and to put out, you know, all that stuff. You know what? I'd rather not have that. There's trouble with it. Proverbs 22:1, "Good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and a loving favor rather than silver and gold." That loving favor could be that of a wife, it could be that of God, it could be taken many different ways. I'll tell you this, you'd rather have a good relationship with your wife than to have a lot of money and have to worry about why people are around you or why she likes you. You know, Bill Gates, he's got a wife. Do you think there might be questions in his mind once in a while why she wanted to marry him? I can tell you this, my wife didn't marry me for my money. She didn't marry me for my looks. So I don't have, there's some things I don't have to worry about quite so much. Hearken, my beloved brethren, hath not God chosen the poor of this world rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he hath promised to them that love him? Letter B. Generosity will help us keep a proper perspective on money and possessions. You and I have to learn to be generous. Now, I've been open with you, and I've told you I've had times where, you know, on a Wednesday night when pastor is taking up an offering for someone, and I can't even tell you how many times God has put in my heart, you just give whatever's in your wallet. And I told you, I was honest with you. There are times when I've opened it up going, how much is in there tonight? You know, I can't remember. Man, I can make $5 last a month, guys. I can do it. And since I told you that, it happened again. It happened again. It was within the last month, and I was in there, and God said, "Give it." And I opened it, and that was my gas money. So I thought, God, now what? You know, how am I gonna? You know what? I'm still driving my car. Can't believe it. I never ran out of gas. Now, I didn't say I didn't fill my tank, but I have not run out of gas, and I didn't run out of money. God somehow took care of that for me. Generosity. Proverbs 11. There is that scattereth, and yet increaseth. There is that withholdeth more than is meet, but it tendeth to poverty. The liberal soul, different than politically liberal, by the way, shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be on the head of him that selleth it. Luke 16:11. If therefore you've not been faithful with the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And I wonder how many Christians are suffering spiritual famine because they're unwilling to give of their financial money and the things that they own. Page number 141, letter C, the love for money will lead to destruction and bad decisions in life. Bad decisions. There's just many examples of that. But I've given you five verses there to give an idea and direction on that. Philippians 3:19, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, whose glory is their shame, who mind earthly things. That is just not the direction we want to go in. And there are many people, as we mentioned a few moments ago, that have walked away from righteousness and walked away from God because of a covetous heart. Letter D, money and possessions never satisfy the true needs and longings of the heart. Proverbs 23:4, labor not to be rich. Cease from thine own wisdom. Wilt thou set thine eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away as an eagle toward heaven. If I only had, and we talked about that in 2 Corinthians 8, if I just had this, I'd give it to the church. And I think that there are many times that God doesn't give us those things because he knows what we're really like. And that money would never make it to the offering. Just talking to someone just this last week who said they were under conviction because it was what they had done for the last couple of years, really, is when they had money after paying their bills, they would tithe. And they were like, you know, it doesn't ever seem to work. I said, you're right. It's not going to work. You're always going to have a bag with holes in it. You cannot keep up with the bills that you're going to have. It's never going to be convenient to give. Never. You just got to do it and expect and wait for God to take care of the needs that you have. Labor not to be rich. Cease from thine own wisdom. That's what God says. Psalm 37:25, I have been young, and now I'm old. I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. What a testimony. What a testimony to God's provisions. Letter E, each person must decide to serve either Christ or money and possessions. You cannot serve both. No man can serve two masters. It's not possible. 1 John 2:15, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. We have to make a decision. Am I going to serve Christ or am I going to serve money? Every year, we joke about this, but every year we look at the, and just as an example, we look at the some of the seniors at North Star and read what they put in the yearbook. What are your future goals? Get rich, get married, and live the good life. Things like that. You know, have a few kids, but it's get a great job, make a lot of money. And so many people have that goal, and they don't make it. Let me just close tonight with this verse, Psalm 24, verse 3 and 4 and 5. It says, "Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord? Or who shall stand in his holy place? He that hath clean hands and a pure heart, who hath not lifted up his soul unto vanity, nor sworn deceitfully, he shall receive the blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation." Tonight, as we close on this commandment, sin of the heart, the issue is, who's going to ascend into the hill of the Lord? Who's going to have that, by practical application, who's going to have fellowship with God? Clean hands. Those with clean hands and a pure heart. The sin of covetousness is a sin of both. It's internal and it's external. It starts in our heart, comes out in our lives through different various things, whether it's through our possessions, whether it's through our checkbook. But it will eat us alive, and it will never be satisfied. You and I want to have fellowship with God. We're going to have to learn to curb that thing. We're going to have to learn to bring it under control and learn to be content with what God has given to us. Clean hands and a pure heart. And then there's hope for that fellowship with God. And that's where we're going to end tonight. And it is my hope, my prayer that our study of these commandments have been a help.